Blind Cool Tech, June 29, 2006.
Blind Cool Tech, where fun.
Well, I wanted to play with the podcast stuff, okay?
Technology,
the world,
is anybody there? And blindness.
Ah, God, who put that wall there?
Can all come together.
Hey y'all, how you doing? I'm Larry Skudkon. In the office with me today is Rob Meredith. And we are going to talk about a new release of Studio Recorder. Tell us about it, Rob.
All right. Well, I haven't been around for a while. You guys might notice I fell into the shadows for quite a while. We don't sit around and talk about SR too much. That's because we're busy working on it and working on other things. But I think it's finally time to talk a little bit about it and get everybody back up to speed.
Studio Recorder, by the way, for those of you that don't know, is a digital audio recording and editing application produced by American Printing House for the Blind.
Another fine alternative in the audio editing arena.
And absolutely the most accessible audio editor out there.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's talk about some of the new features in 3.5. We have just a little housekeeping type thing. We removed one of the commands, which was the change sample rate command from the special menu, and we stuck that in the select format dialog, which you access with Control M or select from the file menu. And we did that basically to get all the format parameters in one place. It essentially performs the same function that it did. So you can change the sample rate without changing the data if you just need to essentially affect the pitch for whatever reason. And now we're on to new stuff, new and exciting stuff. First of all, we have some new self-voicing-like options. We have the keys A and S. Both perform special self-voicing functions where A reads the peak meter, the peak hold on the peak meter, through your screen reader. So if you're using JAWS or Window Eyes, it'll just use that voice and come through the same way. You don't have to worry about any special synthesizer configuration or anything like that.
Or any scripts to write or anything
right,
like that.
None of those details. So A reads the peak hold and S reads the entire status bar. And if you want to configure what S reads, you can just go over to, Option Settings. And the status bar tab, and then you can select the layout of the status bar, and that was introduced back in 3.0.2.
And you know, we've really been toying with the idea of changing the default status bar, because right now it has a lot of things on it that I think most of us probably aren't using anymore, like the number of tones and the number of marks. Well, actually, you may want the number of marks, but that new status bar adjustability is really nice, because you can put the most important information that you want first and just put the information you want on the status bar. So you may have current time, sample rate, you know, that may be all you care about.
Right. Also, if you want to turn off the number of marks, which I do, you can just hit H and then use your screen reader's command to read the status line of the show marks dialog, and that always tells you the number of marks.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a cheat that I use.
And these two commands, I mean, you'd always been able to read the peak meter holds and the status line, but a lot of people are not familiar with their screen reader commands and didn't realize, you know, this is some important information in this program, and that's why we kind of moved it to the forefront where you can gain access to it with a minimum amount of fuss or configurability.
Yeah, like if you're used to using insert page down in JAWS to read the status line, that's fine. You can just keep doing that, and that continues to work. And that's what I've been doing for 6 years. And I had a script to read the peak hold for 6 years, so I have not been suffering like some people may have.
But nobody has to suffer now.
Right. We made this so that I don't have to tell people how to write scripts and try to figure out how to distribute them and worry about which version of JAWS they're using and all those details.
Okay.
Let's see here. We have the ability to resample now. You can do a traditional resample where you select resample from the process menu and just change the sample rate of the whole file. And this is different than the change sample rate idea we discussed earlier, where you're just changing the sample rate value stored in the file. This is actually modifying the data to play properly at a different sample rate. So if you have a situation where you need to take an old file that happens to be maybe 22,050 hertz, you can upsample that to 44,100, or vice versa. You can take higher sample rate files, like you might record at 96K, and you might need to get down to 44.1 for CDs. So you can do all those kinds of things with the resample command. And we also do automatic resampling process, where now if you insert a file or paste some data, if the sample rate didn't match before, you got a message that was really frustrating, kind of message that said waiver file formats are incompatible. But now what happens is it will change the sample rate to match the destination document sample rate. And it'll let you know that on the status line. I just now realized that you'll have to read that with your traditional screen reader status command there, because the program is busy doing something. Maybe we could look at changing that at some point. But the status line will show that it's resampling. It also, you can usually tell that there's a little bit of resampling going on as well, because it does take time, unlike the paste and insert file commands, when it's only a difference in channels or a difference in sample size, 8, 16, 24, 32 bit, the resample does take time. But the good news is it uses the highest quality available in our resampling algorithm that we licensed to do the resample when you do a paste. If you choose to resample by hand a portion or an entire file, you can't actually resample just a portion. You have a choice of three quality settings, low, medium, and high. And they're basically, the lower quality takes less time, essentially. I usually recommend using high, but depending on your situation, you may want to consider a medium or low setting. Go ahead, man.
This idea of resampling in the background for specific operations like paste or file inserts is sort of a direction that we'd like to move further in with Studio Recorder. So if you try to do this in a lot of other applications, and with older versions of Studio Recorder, you just get a message box that says essentially that you can't do this because there are different sample rates or what have you. And then you're expected to know, you need to go check what each of the sample rates is and convert one or the other of them to be compatible and then paste it in. But we're trying to put some intelligence into the program without making it so that it's doing things that you don't know about, because you really do need to be aware that your data is changing, and that can be important to you. If you're going to do an operation multiple times, that's not a good way to do it.
Right. You kind of want to know that you're doing a resampling operation.
And it does tell you that on the status line.
Right.
Now, those other messages on the status line, was that a 303? Is that new in 3.5? I've forgotten.
There's some that are new. Okay. For example, if you normalize now, normalization is a two-step process where we have to first determine the peak level of the file, peak and or RMS, and secondly, we then change the volume essentially to match the requested normalization. Before, it just said normalizing, and it counted to 100% twice, and so it left people a little confused. Why does it count twice? But now, the messages actually tell you in more detail what's going on. So it'll say measuring the first pass, and it'll count to 100%, and then it'll say normalizing the second time and count to 100%.
You know what? I am remiss. We're sitting here running studio recorder talking about the A. This is how easy it is, people.
Clip negative 1.1.
So I had a clip on the left channel, and I'm negative 1.1 on the right channel. I can hit my reset and get a more accurate reading.
Negative 8.2, negative 27.2.
So, same thing with the status line. I can just press S.
1059 recording over 16 stereo 44,100 HD 7.0 dB.
So, that's how easy and nice it is.
Oh, yeah. All right, so let's see. A kind of subtle change here is that we now play our internal sounds at their normal speed and pitch and volume. So, like the bond that you get after a save, if you had cranked up Studio Recorder's playback volume with F2, for example, that bond came out, you know, very loud and clipped. Now it always plays at its normal volume. And if you happen to change the pitch with F8, the same goes. It's not going to play at a strange pitch. There was a little bug fix where we had... we weren't saving external marks with MP3 files that were modified. How do I get this right? It's a little hard to explain. If you export an MP3 file, we save marks in a separate file with it so the Studio Recorder can reload your marks when you open the MP3 file later. And that part worked, but a lot of people probably don't know this. If you open an MP3 file, any MP3 file, you can actually set marks in Studio Recorder. And when you close that file, it'll automatically save the marks in a separate file. So the next time you open that MP3 file, you'll be able to navigate to your marks.
I bet a lot of people don't know that.
And that was actually broken in a couple versions back, and that's been repaired. That was real helpful in my particular case, and I may do a podcast on this at some point. And I guess at some point for me means never, but I'd like to do a podcast on this at some point. I took Adele's reading of the R09 menus, and rather than put the menus into a text file, I just put marks in different parts of the file where different menu items were discussed and labeled those marks with the menu item text. So if I want to refresh my memory on the R09 menus, I just open up that MP3 file and hit H, and I have all the menu items there in the show marks dialog, and I can just navigate to them. And
yeah, H brings up the show marks dialog.
And then, as an added bonus, if I send that file to my book port, I can use the section navigation command to navigate to those marks as well.
That's right.
So that's a real handy little feature that people may not know about. And like I said, hopefully someday somebody will demonstrate that more effectively. And
I really hope so.
That was a good one.
Did you all know that also you can use the H dialog? I call it the H dialog. What is it? Show marks?
Yeah, it's called show marks, but downstairs they call it the H screen. Yeah, in the studio.
I don't know if you all realize this or not, but now. Studio Recorder places marks for your file optionally at key or milestone places while you're working on a project. For instance, if you insert a file, it puts a mark at the beginning and the end and actually labels those marks with insert file begin and insert file end. So you can go to the show marks dialog and move very effectively and quickly to any portion of a project that you've done a lot of editing on. So check that out. Very nice feature.
It's real handy. You can also, let's see, you can go to a mark in show marks, and you can delete marks just by tapping the delete key in the show marks dialog as well. So it's kind of a nice way to get an overview of all the different kinds of marks in your file, where they are, go to them, and how many there are, how many of each type there are, and the ability to delete them. All right, let's see. We had a situation, or for some people, and this would have turned me off if I was checking out the demo for sure, but the WaveView and Studio Recorder, if you navigated, say you used the alt left and right arrows and navigated large distances, that the playback would cut out either on some sound cards or with high sample rate files, like a 96K file. And this has been corrected in this latest version. My solution on systems where this was a problem was to just use the time view. But now you can go on using the wave view and not have to worry about the wave view refresh slowing you down. Let's see. For those really heavy technical folks, if you open a file from the command line, that folder will be the next folder shown in the open dialog. There's probably not much more icing I can put on that.
Well, I think it's kind of handy if you're just in the File Explorer and you right-click and open with Studio Recorder, and then you want to open another file, you're already in the right folder.
Yeah, that's when that's helpful. And then if you, if for some reason you don't want that, you you can always do Alt-F in the open dialog, and that has the 20 most recent folders, open, save, export to MP3, or insert file. All those actually update that recent folder list.
You know, that is a feature I have not taken much advantage of.
I love it.
I really should.
I usually forget to use it, but
yeah.
It's real handy, and it always puts the most recent ones at the top, so usually not too far away from the folder of interest.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's see. The most exciting feature to me in this version, and definitely the one that was the most work, was full 24-bit support for all functions in Studio Recorder, with a couple of minor exceptions like index tones and stuff like that. But essentially now you can take a 24-bit file and normalize, change volume, resample, do all the things that you could only do with 16-bit files before, phrase detection, all those things. And this was the real major feature in this version. I really wanted to have this in for 3.0, but it just didn't happen that way. And that's really why we decided to go with 3.5 on this one rather than something like 3.2 or 3.1.
And this has been one of our major, major goals on the path to where we want this software to be.
Right.
So we're very excited to have that in there. Of course, let's talk about what a little more. We're not finished with that before we go on with this discussion. But so 24-bit, what about 32-bit?
We support 32-bit PCM. We always have supported 24 and 32 in a limited capacity. The 32-bit works fine. You can normalize and change volume and all those things. It's only guaranteed accurate out to 24 bits. So when you do 32-bit, there's going to be just a little bit of rounding. This is really not a factor because there's no sound hardware out there that can record anything close to 32 bits anyway. When you record 24-bit, in fact, the noise floor these days is much higher than it would be if you had true 24-bit support from sound card hardware. So the only benefit you gain from 32-bit, basically is if you happen to wind up with a file that somebody gave you that is 32-bit, you can open it and work on it and save it that way if you need to. But it's really guaranteed accurate out to 24 bits and maybe just a little bit beyond. It's better if you're really into high-end audio, you probably know this, but it's better to work in 24-bit, especially if you're going to be making a lot of modifications. Like if your goal is to produce a 16-bit file, but there's a lot of twists and turns in between, like you might paste in a lot of different sections and have to normalize those sections and normalize the whole entire file or do dynamic compression as a final step, it's technically more accurate to do that over in the 24-bit realm. and then go down to 16 bits as the final step. So you can now do that with Studio Recorder.
And what it, just for the novices among us out there, what does 24 bits do for you?
It's a much more accurate representation of sampled sound. The difficulty you have with digital audio, digital audio is pretty much the modern-day audio lifesaver, but it does have its downsides. And the downside of digital audio is that very quiet sounds have less values to represent them. They don't really get equal representation that large values get, and basically that's because the closer you get to silence, the less values you have on both sides of the line to represent the signal. For example, in a 16-bit realm, we have values that range from about plus or minus 32,767. And when you get down into, say, the negative 70 dB range, you're looking at values that are between plus or minus 4 and or plus or minus 6 or so. So between the absolute silence point, which is approximately negative 96 dB in a 16-bit file, there's really just a couple values that represent a whole 20 dB range from, say, negative 96 to negative 76. And what happens in practicality is those low-level signals begin to get squared, and they sound kind of fuzzy at a really low level because the values are so small, you can't really represent, you know, sine wave data very well. As the sounds get louder, it's not much of a problem because there's a whole lot more range to describe the signal in. And in 24-bit, you know, those low-level signals are at least, you know, 256 or more. So there's a lot more ways to describe low-level signals in the 24-bit realm than there are in a 16-bit realm. And the term we use to describe the noise that's generated in a situation where the numbers are inadequate to describe the signal is called quantization noise. So, if you're still with me...
No, actually, that was a good discussion.
That's the advantage of 24-bit. There's less noise. Say you record a particularly soft event. You have really quiet microphones, and you're in 24-bit, and you're looking at signals that are, you know, maybe negative 50 dB peak or so, and they tend to hover in the negative 60s or negative 70s just because it's such a quiet sound. If you record that in 16-bit and then normalize it, you're going to have a lot more hiss and noise than you would if you had recorded that in 24-bit. So essentially you get less noise and more accurate volume scaling.
Okay. Good explanation, Rob. Thanks.
Yeah. I'm out of breath. Sorry, that's all right.
Sorry I asked.
Let's see. We have support for RAW files. And there's two situations a person might get into when you want to deal with RAW audio data. You may have RAW data from some other device that doesn't understand Microsoft RIFF WAV files, like you might have a sampling keyboard that can just dump PCM data. Or some other device. Or you may be unfortunate in that you have a corrupt WAV file, which has no longer retains a RIFF WAV header, which is essentially the header describes the format of the WAV file, format number of channels, sample rate, bits per sample, all these things. And if for some reason that header is gone, you can still load that WAV file to try to preserve as much of it as you can with the RAW feature of the open dialog. What you do is you just hit open and tab down to the files of type area and pick RAW. And then you get presented with a dialog after you pick your file that lets you decide the sample rate, bits per sample, number of channels, and the size of the header or trailer. Header and trailer is the idea that your device or corrupt file may have extra bytes at the beginning or end that you want to skip. And if you're into the situation enough where you know the number of bytes, you can type those values in. If you're like most of us, you probably don't know what those values should be, and you just leave zeros in those spots. And if it doesn't sound right, you just kind of play with those values a little bit, nudge them up by one time until you get the desired result.
Okay.
But those of you that need to load raw files, you know how to do it. Actually, I've gotten into a situation once in a while. Perhaps this is a firmware bug, but the R1 occasionally will not save a WAV header on its files. I'll hit stop and I'll hit play and I won't get any sound, and then it'll go back to the first file on the device. And it's not a corrupt card situation, it's just that the data's there but it has no RIF WAV header. Good news is, now with Studio Recorder, you can plug in your R1 and move that file over and load it as a RAW file, and everything's perfectly intact, so nothing lost.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody else is experiencing that problem, but that's a great way to solve it. And I haven't pursued as whether there's a new firmware update for the R1 that addresses this or not. I don't think there is, but I should probably look into that. I'd say the second most important feature, we didn't rank these in importance order, unfortunately. The second most important feature behind 24-bit support is probably background saves. And we now have that.
Oh, my goodness, I forgot that not the whole world doesn't have that already, huh?
Right, it's wow. Once you get used to it, you never go back. The idea is that you save a document and immediately continue working on either that same document or any other document in Studio Recorder. And it will happily save in the background and not bother you, you know, unless you have a disk full condition or something. But if you're like most people, that's not a problem, and everything just goes on happily. The only thing you really can't do is close that window or perform another background operation, for example, the export to MP3. While, you know, you can't perform two background operations at the same time on the same file. But you can, for example, load up five documents and request that the program export them all to MP3 and happily continue working. You know, it'll just queue them up and get to each one when it can. And you'll get a little bell for each one if you happen to be in stop mode. So that's a real exciting. The regular, you know, save as feature or save working in the background has really broadened this thing out. I don't know all the audio editors well, but I don't think anybody else is doing this.
Hmm.
I know in SoundForge you can save and go work in another document, but I don't think you can work with the document you're working on. It sounds crazy that you would want to be able to work on the same document that you just saved, but it really is handy. You might want to listen to it. It might just be a matter of,
yeah.
You know, there might be a storm coming and you just want to be sure you're out to disk, and you do a save and then you navigate, you change your marks or whatever and save again. You might want to, you might find something you want to edit. You can go ahead and continue editing while you're saving. It really doesn't matter. So it's a real powerful feature. I think the people in the studio are going to love that feature because they won't have to wait anymore.
Yeah.
You can even record in that same document. So, the crossfade command that was introduced probably in 3.0 has been expanded out. It used to have a limitation of about, I think it was 2 megabytes. So depending on your format, the time varied. But now that it's an unlimited crossfade, so... it'll crossfade up to the maximum file size, up to, I guess you'd say, half of the maximum file size, because the most you could possibly crossfade would be go to the center of a file and do a full crossfade. But there's no more limitation, so
yeah,
crossfade
nice.
Away and enjoy yourselves.
Very nice.
And I think, I don't. This is, again, I don't know all the audio editors, but I think we're one of the only ones that does an inline or a in-place crossfade, where you don't have to use the clipboard to do a crossfade.
You know, that it really is kind of a mix, too.
Right.
I mean, you don't have to fade in or out the data on either side of the cursor. You can actually use it as a mix.
Right. It's a real, real handy little feature. It's great for transitions. That's really what it's mm-hmm. for. Let's see. That's all we have for the 3.5.
That's it?
Like I said, I mean, it's not nearly as exciting as it was, I think, when 3.0 came out, because 3.0 we had a long list of features. But at least from a coding perspective, it's as exciting because we have the major features, background save and 24-bit support and resampling. Resampling is either a close second or third, I'd say, to those features.
Yeah. Yeah, we were pretty excited about that. And, you know, this really is a big milestone in the evolution of where we want this product to go, because the 24-bit was something that we really wanted to have in the foundation before we went on to the next step.
Right.
And, well, Rob, go ahead and tell us about where we're heading with this.
Well, we'd like to have a competitive product that people would use maybe in place of other products they might be using. And we felt that 24-bit support for anyone who's serious about audio was a necessity. And that's why I wanted to have that into 3.0. But it's finally here now in 3.5. And I'd say a next logical step would probably be something in the area of the DirectX plugin architecture. That's probably the major feature that we hear about most from users that they'd like to have.
And we are listening. We just had to get things right before we could start on it.
And it's a real major change, too. And we want to be sure we get it right. And along the way, we'll throw in some little minor enhancements. We're always using this thing. So if there's a little bug discovered, there's a chance that it's fixed, hopefully, before anybody else discovers it. I often notice little things about it that aren't quite exactly how we want them, and I'll go ahead and fix them on the spot. Hopefully, if anyone's having any trouble, they report their problems to the list, and we get those things taken care of that way as well.
Or to our technical support if you're using a release version of the product.
Yeah.
Okay, if people are interested in getting an upgrade, well, first of all, Studio Recorder is available from APH for $200, and the 800 number, if you would like to order it, is, what is it, Rob?
It's 800-223-1839.
And if you already have a version of Studio Recorder, this is a free upgrade. Very easy to get, too. You just go to the Help menu and click on Check for Update.
Yep.
And you should be notified with a dialog that says, do you want to update? Tells you the new version number and your old version number. And has yes, no, and details.
So and that details button's real important around here. we have a running joke about the details. Sometimes we think we're the only ones that ever use that feature for testing purposes, but hopefully people will check out the details, because it gives you an idea, you know, if you what the changes are before you actually install the product, if it matters to you.
And then once you've already installed it and you decide, well, I don't know what those details were, I forgot to check, you can go to your programs, Studio Recorder, and what's new in Studio Recorder. Is there anything else we need to tell people about version 3.5 or Studio Recorder in general?
No, I think we're in pretty good shape.
There is a demo of Studio Recorder also at aph.org/tech, T-E-C-H, if you've not tried it before.
Yeah, and it's one of these demos that runs as long as you need it to. It just doesn't save, and it has a little, I think the other limitation is it only plays the first half of a file. Other than that, we're, you know, it's very open. You can load, save, process, or you can't save, but you can load and process and record and do all the things you might be able to, you know,
get a good feeling for it.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for joining us today, Rob, with your 24-bit knowledge there.
And, all right.
Appreciate the update on Studio Recorder.
Great.
And that's going to do it for this edition of Blind Cool Tech. Y'all have a good one, and we will see you next time.
You've been listening to Blind Cool Tech. Visit us on the web at blindcooltech.com. Our email address is blindcooltech@gmail.com, and our comment line is 206-984-9203.